Now, film critic Bob Mondello's 10 best movies of the year. It is a list so jam-packed with movie greatness that, well, I'll let Bob tell you.
It takes a couple of years to make a movie, so capturing this moment in time isn't quite what Hollywood does, but it's undeniable that a world in conflict is currently prompting some terrific movies about conflict, none more immediate than a battlefield epic that sends two British soldiers on a mission in which the tension has nearly as much to do with camera work as with carnage.
Dogfight. Who's winning?
Us, I think.
Director Sam Mendes and cinematographer Roger Deakins have contrived to make 1917 look like a single uninterrupted shot. No visible edits, no dissolves, no cuts to a close-up. The camera glides along just in front of the men, just behind them, pivoting sometimes to catch an expression or a flare or a plane falling out of the sky, headed straight for them and for us. The effect is that we're there with the men in real time. 1917 is set in World War I. Terrence Malick's gorgeous A Hidden Life is set in World War II, an epic of conscience about an Austrian farmer who refuses to pledge allegiance to Hitler.
I can't do what I believe is wrong.
An urgent, wrenching story in which the leading man's suffering,
we have to stand up to evil,
is offset by Malick's always exquisite images. Another filmmaker with a distinctive style and a taste for cinematic conflict, Martin Scorsese. His film, The Irishman, is a mob flick set during the Kennedy and Johnson administrations and bearing the weight of that history. Robert De Niro plays a hitman, Al Pacino is Teamsters president Jimmy Hoffa, and Joe Pesci is a messenger for mobsters who want to rein Hoffa in.
He's in the higher ups.
Well, he's a higher up too. I mean, no.
Not like this, you know. Oh, come on, Frank. If they can whack a president, they can whack a president of a union.
The Irishman, though grand and violent and clearly designed for the big screen, was barely in theaters before it started streaming. That's also true of Noah Baumbach's phenomenal Marriage Story, a film that treats divorce as a kind of escalating, no-holds-barred domestic warfare.
Every day I wake up and I hope you're dead. Dead like if I can guarantee Henry would be okay. I'd hope you'd get an illness and then get hit by a car and die.
Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson begin Marriage Story seeking an amicable settlement. Then divorce lawyers get involved and the pain becomes intense.
I'm sorry.
There are echoes of writer-director Noah Baumbach's own divorce in Marriage Story, so it's reassuring that he and his current partner, Greta Gerwig, are each thriving behind the camera. Gerwig has adapted and directed Louisa May Alcott's Little Women, turning that Civil War-era tale into this year's most exuberantly entertaining and pointed costume drama.
I intend to make my own way in the world.
No, no one makes their own way. Not really. Least of all a woman. You'll need to marry well.
But you are not married, aren't you?
Well, that's because I'm rich.
Little Women brings my list to 5. The next 3 are also directed by women, and not surprisingly, when women direct films about women, the results are smart and sophisticated. Mati Diop became the first black woman to direct a film in competition at the Cannes Film Festival with Atlantics. It's a powerful take on emigration issues, a romance slash police procedural slash ghost story about women left behind as the men of Senegal try to smuggle themselves into Europe. There are hardly any men at all in Celine Sciamma's Portrait of a Lady on Fire, a French costume drama about an 18th century heiress who resists sitting for her bridal portrait.
Comme vous êtes troublée. Vous respirez par la bouche.
Until she's seduced by the woman who's painting her. Portrait of a Lady on Fire is a ravishing and, as you might expect, a painterly film. More contemporary and down-to-earth is Lulu Wang's The Farewell, a quietly devastating dramedy about Chinese Americans who are hiding their grandma's terminal diagnosis from grandma, a notion her granddaughter, who's played by Awkwafina, can't seem to get her head around.
The family thinks it's better not to tell her.
Why is that better?
Chinese people have saying, when people get cancer, they die.
The Farewell is based on the director's own family story, and she tells it in ways that are both funny and resonant. That's eight. Rounding out my top 10 are two films that, if they were in English, would be front runners for Best Picture at the Oscars. The Korean social satire Parasite starts out as a comedy of manners about two families, one wealthy, the other working class, then curdles into a furious snarl of class rage. And from Spain comes a sunny autobiographical comedy, Pedro Almodóvar's Pain and Glory, about a filmmaker estranged from and then reunited with the star he made famous decades earlier. Antonio Banderas plays the filmmaker, and if you know that he was himself estranged from and then reunited with Almodóvar, who made him famous, the story comes together with a satisfying snap.
Estoy con Salvador Mayo.
It's also fascinating as a film about filmmaking. 10 is an arbitrary number, and I've still got some time, so I'm going to keep going. Like Almodóvar, Quentin Tarantino has been looking back at filmmaking with a nostalgic eye. His Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is about a 1960s TV star and his stunt double best buddy.
So, Rick, explain to the audience exactly what it is a stunt double does.
Actors are required to do a lot of dangerous stuff. Cliff here is meant to help carry the load.
Is that how you describe your job, Cliff?
What, carrying his load? Yeah, it's about right.
Two other buddy flicks stretch the form in offbeat ways. The Lighthouse, a black and white weirdness that's half sea shanty, half horror comedy with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson.
Why just spill your beans?
And Ford v. Ferrari, a true story racing flick starring Matt Damon, Christian Bale, and the hottest cars this side of Le Mans. Ford v. Ferrari is like comfort food, old-fashioned movie-making at its most confident. Other films went for surprise. The German film Transit, for instance, feels like a Holocaust film from the 1940s, but is set the day after tomorrow. Equally startling, a sweetly philosophical animated film in which a severed hand goes looking for its owner. I Lost My Body has more imaginative oomph in any 3 minutes than Frozen 2 does in its whole running time. Splendid documentaries include The Cave, about a woman doctor in an underground Syrian hospital, The Biggest Little Farm, which will make you want to take up organic farming immediately, and Toni Morrison, The Pieces I Am, which makes a great writer who died this year wonderfully accessible.
A friend of mine called me up early in the morning and said, Toni, you won the Nobel Prize. And I remember holding the phone thinking, she must be drunk.
Punch Drunk Performances power synonyms about an Israeli soldier who thinks he can turn himself French using a thesaurus, and Uncut Gems, which in a perfect world would win Adam Sandler an Oscar. That's 20. What do you think? Can I squeeze in a quirky story about cultural appropriation, the last black man in San Francisco? Apparently I can, which makes 21 reasons for confidence in movies as we head into a new decade. I'm Bob Mondello.